coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I am Andrew Farmer, and with me, as always, the Jedi, Cole Houston.
Good evening, everybody.
He's here. He's here. I'm real excited about this.
Should I say good evening?
Oh, no. Yay. You were so nice to let me come on your show a couple times there and talk a bit.
Came on to the burrows here.
And so I thought I'd come on to the show and give you a little bit of walking tour of New York. I thought, Cole. Hey,
yo.
Mook, you guys are doing this show about New York tonight, right? Is that what you're doing?
Doing a show on New York.
All right, so
New York.
So you let Angelo come on your show and talk a few times in the past. And
hey, who is this Jamoke?
Vague racism. But you let Angelo come on your show, so Angelo thought he'd give you a nice walking tour of his New York over here, the Hey Kids Comics New York. And so you come over here, you're walking, you see the Baxter Building is right there, it's big. And so the thing lives in the Baxter Building, and I used to run in Yancey with the thing, and you know the thing about the thing, right?
I know a thing or two about a thing,
you know, or thing
two.
Or two about a thing. He got weird hands. Got big hands. The thing got big hands.
He's got big rocky hands. What are you gonna do? He's got like he went through the gamma rays.
Got big hands. It's all right though.
You go through the gamma rays. See what happens to you.
He's got big hands. Look over there. You see that sanctum. What is it? Sanctorum over there. Yeah. You know who lives in there?
Doctor Strange.
Yeah, he got weird hands. He got his hands so weird. He's got strange hands. Yeah, he used to be a surgeon. Got his hands all got messed up, and now he's got to wear these weird gloves. And his hands look super weird, dude. Super weird. You should see him. I saw him once. I was in the bodega, and he went to a taquito, and they told him to take off his gloves. But you know, he's a nice guy. He's got some nice gloves.
Are nice gloves. They're made out of puma pelts.
And then over there, looking up at the building, you see that guy? He's swinging up there. He's swinging. It could be anybody. There's 100 of them over here. But I think that's Spider-Man. You know what he does with his hands?
He has weird hands.
He touches little boys with his hands. No, he doesn't. Come on, Angelo.
No, he touches.
Come on,
whoa,
Angelo.
Whoa.
All right. Thanks, Angelo. Angelo's joining us tonight for a special show on New York City. I'm real excited about talking about New York City. Are you excited, Cole?
I am very excited because I have been there once.
I have been there. Well, you're pretty far away.
Yeah, your proximity to New York City is far grander than my own, especially at the moment.
It is, yes. I have been there a few times. You have been there once.
It's like a milk run from where you are.
It's like a 9-hour milk run, but you can do it. you can do it. It's just like a 9-hour milk run. It's pretty out there, but yeah, you can get there. I've been there a few times. It's nice. It's nice. There's a lot of hustle and bustle, but comics give New York a bad name. I'll tell you that right now. Knowing New York the way I know New York, which isn't as good as New Yorkers know New York, comic books give New York a real bad name. Nothing good ever. What's the last comic book thing you can remember that was good that happened in New York?
Well, that's
that thing once.
Well, New York becomes sort of a nexus. You see, you look at from the cosmic scale, especially at Marvel, the Earth becomes a nexus for the entire universe.
Right.
And then once you get to Earth, you need it's like second nexus.
It's the hobbits doing second nexus.
Second nexus, yes. But you know, it's like the more centralized nexus then becomes New York City. It seems like if you're barrel-assing through the galaxy, you're inevitably drawn to the planet Earth, and once in its gravitational influence, it rockets you straight into the middle of Manhattan.
Yeah, it does.
Is it New York's fault that New York is like this giant magnetic sponge.
Of course it's not. Of course it's not New York's fault that New York is the giant magnetic sponge. Do you know whose fault? So I had this realization today, and I don't know, you know, I've been, it's, damn it, Cole. It's, one of those, Jesus, one of those, realizations, I got Martha'd.
Okay.
So New York has been, especially now, especially in Marvel, DC, because DC decided really early on to invent their own cities, your Gothams, your Metropoli, your Keystones, your Stars.
Hubs.
Yeah, they decided to invent their own cities, which I think was kind of genius.
Yes.
But especially in Marvel, there's a few instances of New York in DC. DC does a pretty good job of including real places in their comics. I'll never forget the fact that I think her name is Black Alice. She was a part of the Acts of Vengeance. That was Marvel and the best crossover ever made. The dumbest crossover ever made, but still the best. What was the name of that that big? I think it was Infinity. I think it was Infinity War. There was a comic book called Day of Vengeance where all of the kind of Justice League Dark had to rise up against a specter that had kind of turned on humanity. And Black Alice lived in Dayton, Ohio.
Oh my gosh.
And I don't know whether the author was from Dayton or, you know, just decided that Dayton was the place and then to do some research, but it was the Dayton that they had her in, I could tell where they were.
Oh, very nice.
Like, it was dead. And I think New York has the same thing. You know, DC had the Watchmen, of course, which we will talk about later. Speaking of being a character in your book.
Yes, that's true.
But it dawned on me, Martha style, that early on, if you wanted to work for Marvel, you lived in New York City.
Exactly.
And if you lived
DC,
in New York,
really, for that matter. I mean, if you wanted to be in the bullpens, you were a New Yorker, or, you know, were in enough proximity where you could get to New York on a daily basis.
Right. And what do you do as especially at that time period, there's no internet, so you can't pull up Google Maps and you know, you can't pull up, you know, wrote and drew what you knew, and you knew New York. So
yes.
So is this is a chicken and the egg scenario where New York got introduced as the center of the universe because for Marvel, New York was the center of the universe, and it's something they've never been able to shake up to and including the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the TV shows.
Absolutely. And I think that it's that proximity, but also that you have Marvel and DC parked smartly in one of the most familiar and famous cities in the world.
Oh, sure.
So it just makes good sense. It's sort of the, as it's often called, the London of America.
But you also can't imagine.
It's never before this
it's
moment
never.
Been called the London
You're
of America.
You're going to get A, hate
but
mail.
By God,
probably,
I want it to become the London of America.
You're either A, going to get hate mail, or B, straight beat up. We're calling it the London
you know,
of America.
This could well turn into one of those Stephen Colbert
I can call it. It's not going to. But can you imagine, like, Peter Parker swinging building to building to building in sunny Burbank, California?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, New York is also one of the oldest major cities in the country, so it lends itself beautifully. And you don't have to be from New York to buy into the mystique.
I'm Daredevil. I'm the Night Protector of Poughkeepsie. Just doesn't have the same ring.
You know, Bayonne, New Jersey, is just not the place to.
Right, Bone Lick, Kentucky doesn't have real place, by the way.
Well, you know, the heroes and villains of Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. For God's sake, Klein's Corners.
God, for God's sakes. Pine's Corners. But yes, tonight we talk about the majesty.
Apologies to the listeners in Klein's Corners, New Mexico.
The majesty that is New York City as a character. And
I mean, I'll give you, if you want a scorpion in acrylic.
If you have a hankering for some amethyst.
Yeah, just head west to Klein's Corners and you will be well accommodated.
If you want a turquoise encrusted beaded belt, I've got three places, and one of them is Klein's Corner. The other one is Mystery, Arizona.
But none of them will bring you the kind of level of superhero action that New York City.
But I bet you could get a pretty sweet beaded amethyst belt in New York, oh, too.
You probably could. It's probably imported from Klein's Corner.
It's just brought in by truck from Klein's Corner. Muggerville is somehow Klein's. It's like the Metropolis, New Jersey connection, where you never can quite put a finger on it, but they're either within 20 seconds or 4 hours of each other. Klein's Corner and Muggerville are that way. Sister city to Muggerville.
You can't get to one without going to the other.
You can't have one without the other. All right. So, Cole, where do you want to start? Because I know where I want to start.
I really want to look at that, the nature of the beast. Like you said, you had this sudden realization that, you know, if you were making comics in the heyday, back before you could just, you know,
email.
Yeah, work from Klein's, from a desk in Klein's Corners and shoot them across the nation to
that
you.
Yes, continue. My brain.
I think it would
place.
Just be amazingly ironic if some professional in comics today actually lived in Klein's Corners and somehow I channeled that.
If anybody knows any comic creators in Klein's Corners, please have them reach out. We would love to have them on a guest as a
That's
guest
right.
on this show.
So we're going to, but you know, because of that sense of proximity, I remember as a as I began to sort of rationalize where I wanted to go as a budding wannabe comic creator myself, I thought, you know, I need to do the research of the places that the stories I wanted to tell take place, so that there's a sense of reality there.
Sure.
And it never really occurred to me that they've got a, you know, Marvel and DC creators pretty much had a leg up on me.
Right, because they were there already and had been there their entire lives.
And when they had to do anything that had to do with Texas, they didn't bother doing what I was planning to do. But
they just drew big
nobody
text.
Really, yeah, nobody really cares. And like that, next time Eddie's on the show, we need to poke the bear and ask him about that Jurassic Park comic and the how un-Texas the scene was.
Hey, didn't Stan Lee write that? Hey, Eddie, didn't Stan Lee write that Jurassic Park comic that you love so much? But yeah, no, you're absolutely correct. Like, I think that realization that Stan and Kane and Finger and Robinson and Kirby and all of the fathers of modern comics,
yes,
all lived in downtown New York in the Manhattan area. So all of a sudden, Spider-Man, Captain America from the famously from the Bronx, Daredevil, pretty much Punisher. I mean, any kind of the Baxters, the Fantastic Four, everybody was from New York. I don't know if anybody wasn't from New York.
And it's easy to envision the Baxter Building on the horizon.
Yeah,
as you're, you know, you're moving around New York and you can just sort of, wow, look, you know, this would be a perfect place for the Avengers Mansion, or this would be, you know, where these various things. Plus you have the introduced icons like the Baxter Building or Four Freedoms Plaza, as it would become. But then you have the naturally occurring icons, as it were, and that is the Statue of Liberty, for example, or the up to a point the World Trade Center, but you had the Empire State Building. You had so many icons that are part of the fame of New York.
Oh yeah, oh for sure. And You know, there's one place. You know where I want to start talking about the heroes of New York, and or the villains for that matter. And there's one that doesn't always get a lot of play, and that is you've got Spider-Man swinging from building to building in Manhattan. You got Captain America, you know, looking for that chicken fried steak in the Bronx that he just can't find. That's a callback to like issue 4. You've got the Baxter Building, and you know, up north you've got Gray Malkin Lane where the X-Men live, and I think Rochester. I believe it's Rochester.
Yeah, Rochester.
Yeah. Nobody really talks about what happens under the city, where the sewers are protected by none other than the Morlocks.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, well, I want to start...
If I'm not mistaken, alternately...
Yes.
Are the... I'm not 100% certain, but you mentioned the sewers.
Yes, sir.
And I'm not sure whose sewers they were in, but it are was. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles...
100% the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles live in the sewers of New York.
They were New York Turtles, okay.
Well, and I think that that's great. And I think that, you know, the Morlocks and the Turtles feed on this urban legend. And we'll have to ask Eddie to draw, see if he can draw a line here, right?
Yeah.
Because I wonder if that has any relation to all the urban legends about what, you know, what lives in
oh,
the sewers.
Oh, like, yeah, like. Toilet alligators.
Well, also, the mole man and his moloids.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, the alligator in the sewer or the mole people or, you know, all of that. Obviously, the Morlocks are sort of you can make a direct corollary to the homeless population in New York. Especially at the time which they were created when you know, homelessness was rampant and a large part of that population lived in the sewers. So, you know, as much as the X-Men was about racism and overcoming and the Martin Luther King and the Malcolm X, the Morlocks, I really honestly believe, was a direct alliteration of the homeless population in New York, speaking to the value and, you know, the problem. You know, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I honestly believe that had to have had something to do with the urban legend of flushing things down the toilet and them growing to immense sizes in the sewers of New York.
Well, it seems the perfect place to hang out if you're... But yes, the Morlocks, definitely, both the sewers and, like, down into the subway lines.
Yes.
That's always a place to flee or to bide your time. If you're, like, somebody like Vermin...
Oh,
from Spider-Man.
How do you live in New York? I know we've talked about this before. How does anyone live in comic book New York without going insane? Like, without just literally losing their goddamn mind all the time?
It's just, you, for one thing, you know, you have to imagine it's difficult and expensive to get decent homeowners or renters insurance in California because of the San Andreas Fault.
Okay. All right, I'm with you. Let's do this and run it.
The proximity to the Pacific Rim, and ergo the...
You mean like right, a DVD of the Pacific Rim, right?
Absolutely,
like,
yeah.
Walmart somewhere.
In the 350 bin.
Sure.
You know, when you and then daily you go home and look at your shelf and think, you know, God, I paid $15 for that piece of crap.
Right.
I could have waited 10 years. And
10 years. For
but so the important thing with DVDs, if you our takeaway is wait a decade, then buy your movies. Oftentimes you'll get entire trilogies on one set for $5.
One disc now. Like,
one disc
for
$5. Yeah, but no, the being what it is, it must just be horrendous. It must be like an insurance nightmare.
Yeah, what are your premiums?
So, yeah, because you never know. Is, you know, a construction crane going to hit your building, or is Thanos?
Yeah,
you
how
know,
do you plan a date.
Like, yeah, any moment Thanos helicopter could crash
oh,
into
God.
Your.
One should be so lucky.
I know. God. If only.
No, but, I mean, like, how do you even, like, how do you plan, like, anything? Knowing full well 50% of the time something's going to happen. Because it's not just, like, The Avengers are in New York. The
yeah.
Fantastic Four is in New York. The X-Men are enough New York adjacent to be in New York. Then you've got your Hell's Kitchen boys. You got your Daredevils. You got your Moon Knights. You got your Frank Castles. You got your Luke Cages and your Iron Fists. You got all. You got your Jessica Joneses. And then you've also got God knows how many other just rando super people at any given time. And then just normal crime. Which isn't yeah. normal crime in New York when you got the Fantastic Four next door. Like, how do you plan, like, a Thanksgiving with that?
Well, and speaking of normal crime, you know, has it just moved out of the boroughs completely? I mean, let's just say you're in dire straits and you're going to roll the big dice and go be a mugger. Maybe you move from Muggerville. Who knows? Just, you know, go to Jersey and ply your criminal trade there because it's much, much safer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, again, I bet you Klein's Corner.
Oh, yeah. You can mug all day long and, you know, maybe the sheriff's department will catch up to you eventually, but you're not going to have, like, you know, one of 16 Spider-Men converge on you, one or more. On a slow Tuesday.
I mean, Houston just got its first Spider-Man.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Ben Reilly Scarlet Spider is Houston-based. But I don't think there's anything between Houston and New York for a Spider-Man.
Well, for one thing, it's hard to get to New York from Houston on just a web.
It is. It is.
It takes 3 months by web.
And thank God, because I got some serious hot takes when it comes to Houston.
And the thing about it is, you know, there's tremendous Donner Party potential. It's Ben Reilly would be lucky if he gets there with both feet.
I like that you are somehow in your brain. Ben Reilly being a Spider-Man from New York to Houston can't take a bus or a plane or a car. He's got to swing, baby.
Like, that's right.
Can't go any other way.
Just
do you know why? Because he's from New York, and that's the way they do it in New York,
baby.
That's
the way we do it in New York.
We're gonna swing, baby. He's got two double decker buses driving. Like one will speed up and one will slow down, so you can just swing in between them all the way there. We're going
so it's like Spider Von Bomb. So instead of doing the splits, he's just swinging between them.
Damn it. Oh, yeah.
So that's the only thing that makes any sense.
So here's another question I have about New York, then, since we're on New York and all of these superheroes that are in New York, right? Why are you continuing? Hey, all the supervillains ever. I'm just going to talk directly. I'm looking directly into camera at those supervillains. Go to DFW. Go to Chicago. Go to Portland. I mean, go to Atlanta.
I mean, granted, Reilly will get there quicker than New York, but it'll still take him a couple of days by web.
Because he refuses to take anything
just,
by web.
He's going to have to like, go through all those piney woods up there around Sam Houston.
It's piney woods. It's real hard to swing through them piney woods.
That's right. And trees are close together.
Damn it. Are you sitting around with a straw hat and a jug with three X's on it tonight? It's going to be real hard for Ben Reilly to go swinging through the Empire Woods. He got to go through Louisiana. Gator. He's going to go and get him in Gator, boy. Go ahead, swing through the Empire Woods.
Why'd you go through Louisiana to go from Houston, Texas to Dallas, Texas?
No, to go from Houston, Texas. Oh, I thought we were talking about Georgia. All right, never mind. Still got to go through Louisiana. Listen. You got to go where the trees are.
Swing up 45 and you're there, you know?
Listen, I've taken 45 from DFW down to Houston. There's nothing to swing on for about 3 hours. There's a real good place to get jerky.
Get down around Huntsville, there's lots of piney woods.
But you got to jut. You got to jut over into Louisiana, swing your way down and around. That's the spider trail.
coastal route.
There is a great place to get jerky on the way. I'm gonna give you that, but there is not a lot of swinging. You got to take the coastal route.
Well, let's go up to the other to the East Coast. Then back to New York City. We're going back to New York City. Oh, what's the matter?
What's the matter, you? God, we're getting so much trouble for our vague New York racism.
That's regionalism.
And, yeah, probably, yeah, that's true. Is that as bad? I don't think that's as bad.
That's not as bad.
But yes, let's go back. So yes, why do the villains...
Headquarter there.
Yeah, why do they just sequester all the villains and heroes in one place? And if that's the case, why hasn't everybody left?
It has a lot of advantages that go back to its founding. Like, it's a port city.
Yes, you're right. It is a port city, which is important when you're a supervillain.
You've got a lot of infrastructure, and you got some of the finest food in the world here. You're not going to get this kind of pizza down in Texas, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, you know, we get caught every time we try to rob this bank, but right next door, I can get the Dennis Bashute.
Oh, man, I go in there and just get a... Right before the heist, you go in there and get a great big old slice there. You know, you just walk up to the counter. There's nowhere to sit. You just go and you go. That's the way it is.
You get a nice big salam, and then you go rob a bank, and then the Spider-Man catches you and throws you into the prison. But then you got a nice salam when you get out in 3 days.
That's right. You know, it's like, you know, they call me because I reek the salam. But
you got a salam guy.
But you know, the thing about it is, it's. There's so much commerce and so much of everything going on there. Plus, they got Broadway, you know? You don't got that anywhere else in the world.
They do have Broadway. You are correct. Yeah. I now have a theory.
He like folds his little legs back in and enjoys the night. Midnight, and the kitties are sleeping. tear there, and then the next day he goes and menaces Spider-Man.
I have never seen a comic book, and I need... Okay, so I've been reading comic books for a very long time. I've never seen a comic book. I've never seen any villainy on Broadway.
That's true.
So...
He's ever come and, like, disrupted Hamilton.
Is that, like, holy ground for a Highlander? Like, do the heroes and villains... Have they decided that that's the, you know... Is that like the
watering hole? You know, you don't mess with Broadway.
Right. Is that high tea? Like,
yeah,
I wonder if
you don't see, like, Blastar come in. I mean, he's an out-of-towner, for God's sake.
But they know.
He doesn't come shooting up, like, you know, Hamilton or something.
Right. You don't see the Herald of you don't see the Heralds of Galactus descending on Broadway.
Hell no.
I mean, you might get cut. Trying to do something like that. I think that's...
I think the worst that ever happened was Batroc tried to show up late and was turned away at the door.
Right. That's absolutely... I think you're... God damn it.
And then he just left off into the night.
He just... Woo-hoo!
Maurice Chevalier!
He was forced to go see something off Broadway that night.
It was like...
Did you see Maurice Chevalier when he was hopping off into the night?
Yeah.
He just says French names as he's a famous French
name. Oh, Jacques Costard!
Jean-Paul Sartre just off into the night. Ah, oh, Batroc.
You know, but it was, in all fairness, it was a short leap to the off-Broadway theaters.
It was
over Broadhurst in no time.
That's right.
Which is probably a Broadway theater. I have no idea. I just know the name.
But yeah, but, you know, I guess nothing gets more superhero New York-y. Manhattan as a whole, right? Like Manhattan as a rule is just lousy with superheroes. I think there's a superhero every three blocks per capita in Manhattan. But you're literally just stacking superheroes on top of each other, Neo Tokyo style, in Hell's Kitchen. Like, there's just hero after hero in Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah, it may as well just be like, you know, the greatest output of Hell's Kitchen. What are we cooking? Is more superheroes.
It's just so many superheroes. So who is the, for in your mind, who's the most epitomous New York superhero?
I really think that, you know, it's going to be kind of low hanging fruit after our discussion here, but I think that Spider-Man rather, is the defining hero to the point that, you know, New York has this love hate relationship with him.
Okay. Yeah.
So it depends on who follows the obsessive Ahab editor himself of J. Jonah Jameson. But for the most part, New York has embraced Spider-Man as their hero. The Avengers may live here, but they're foreigners, some of them.
Yeah. They're not New Yorkers.
And some of them are like proper aliens, like from Not of This Earth aliens.
Yeah, they're not New Yorkers.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. Anybody who's, yeah. It's like Texas. Anybody who's not a New Yorker is a foreigner. And anybody exactly. who's not a Texan is a foreigner.
That's right.
I get New that. York City. I was a foreigner. I lived there and I was a foreigner. That's true. You're absolutely correct.
So I think that in many ways, Spider-Man becomes the symbolic hero of New York. Granted, there are others who are very much attached. I think the first family of superheroes definitely have staked a claim. But then the ones you don't really think about, just they don't pop in your head when you say New York immediately. But, you know, it's like you said, you know, Hell's Kitchen, you've got your heroes, your various heroes for hire. You know, the Lower East Side, I guess. I don't know.
You've been to New York once.
Yeah, I have zero idea where Spider-Man is principally operating.
Manhattan proper.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, the Upper West East.
Yeah, sure. Go with it. Yeah. Just lean into it, Cole. Lean into it.
You've got the Baxter Building and the Fantastic Four. Greenwich Village has Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange is in the top three of my New York superheroes.
So, you know, you've got these sort of areas of New York that have their epitomous hero.
You do. For me, and it's sort of along the same lines, I like Spider-Man as the New York superhero, right? Like that's good. But my problem with Spider-Man as a New York superhero now is that there are, you know, 800 Spider-Men, and Spider-Man will sometimes go flutin' off into space or down to Houston to visit his buddy Ben or, you know, whatever.
He flies, by the way.
The Spider-Man will fly. He's not Ben. Yeah. He's not a traditionalist like Ben is.
Yeah.
Punisher is mine. Punisher is the most New York, in my mind, the most New York superhero, New York comic book character, right? Not necessarily a superhero, not a good guy, not a bad guy, just a guy getting a job done. We don't have to talk about it. It's going to get done. Job's going to get done. Like, that's for me, the New York, the guy that is epitomous of New York. I really like Spider-Man for that. But if Spider-Man is taken by you, and I can't say Moon Knight because it's just not good enough, even though I really want to, I will say Punisher for mine, for sure.
That's a good point because, you know, he loves New York so much that he drives around in an obvious unpainted A-team van and kills people.
That's true. That's true. But only them that got it coming. And I think that's, you know, and it's not just New York, but I think that we've talked about this before, but, you know, Punisher's born from the zeitgeist of frustration.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the thing is, again, Marvel, based in New York, even at the point in time at which Punisher was created, still, if you wanted to work for Marvel, you lived in New York. I mean, to this, you know, you might have been, at this point, you had to mail pages and scripts back and forth. There still was no fax machine. There was no email. So chances are, if you were working for Marvel, except for some very special people, you were in New York City at the time.
Well, and that's why in the heyday, these places, these publishers had the so-called bullpen because everybody had to come into the office
and write or draw and
pass stuff back and forth within arm's reach of each other.
I really wish there was video. I need to look and see if there is somewhere just video. keep in mind, at the time, nobody cared. Like, and that's the part that sucks about this now, is that now there's this popularity, there's this burst of comic book popularity, right? That has never been there before. Not even in the prime. You know, people really like to eat that sausage in the late 90s and early 2000s, but nobody gave a shit how that sausage was made. And now I think there's a general interest in this lost art. And I would love to see a real documentary about, like, what life was like a day in the life at the Bullpen Bulletin. Like, that would be fantastic.
That would be cool.
Because as much as we like to talk about New York being a character in Marvel or in DC or in, you know, everybody used New York, but it's also a silent partner in Marvel. It should have a credit at the end of every comic book. And that's pretty amazing. But just to finish my point on the Punisher, just real quick, you know, at the time at which the Punisher was created, at the time at which, you know, crime was fairly rampant, New York was not a great place to live. So I think that, again, a character born out of the frustration of the people, as much as Spider-Man was a character born out of the hope of a people, or Captain America was born out of the resilience of a people. And I think that's just as important to get that kind of cathartic release, even if it is through a comic, as it is for a Spider-Man or a Captain America. My piece is set.
All right. Well, I think, you know, because this hour is going to go far too quickly, we cannot talk about New York City as a part of comic book lore without talking about, you know, effectively when the reality of New York City became a vital part of the comic, that the backdrop had been altered so severely that, you know, you can't not acknowledge it in the comics.
Right.
And, of course, I'm talking about 9/11. You know, what did that do to comics? You know, for a while, like everything, there was just this stunned silence. And then you started to see, like, the comic book reaction or the tributes and what have you. You know, the thing about it is, when something that big becomes part of the reality of comics, we have not had that since, in my opinion, World War II.
Right.
Because no one really acknowledged or played around much at all in comics with other wars and police actions and goings on in the world, like they did in World War II, where absolutely everybody went over and smacked Tojo around, kicked Hitler's ass, and what have you. This was this basically brought the real world home to comics and was addressed very heavily in some, you know, special events, but I don't know how much it still affects to this day, other than the backdrop has changed considerably. Like, I remember after 9/11, there was talk about digitally removing the Twin Towers from the backdrops out, you know, window views.
Right.
Of shows like Friends, because, you know, those were just basically scrims that were meant to be as timeless as the skylines they depicted.
I still think that that's tone deaf if we start doing that. But yeah, I'm going to fall back on a comic that I think you and I talked about, and I think I've talked about it on the show before, and that's Ex Machina. Brian K. Vaughan's amazing work talking about kind of the ghost of the machine, as well as, like, it's about a guy who finds an alien artifact and gets the ability to control machines with his brain. And he becomes kind of a superhero about town, he has a buddy who's an engineer that builds a jetpack and he can fly it and, you know, stuff like that. And then 9/11 happens and he's plagued throughout the book. He's plagued with this idea that, you know, 9/11 got him, and after 9/11, after his heroics and during the events of 9/11, he becomes mayor of New York. So it's sort of fitting we do talk about him in this book, but he's plagued because he wasn't able to stop the second plague. Couldn't have stopped the first one, didn't know it was coming.
Yeah.
But he's plagued throughout the entire run that he feels that he could have stopped the second plague and didn't. And I think that that's – so that there was a big Captain America book. There was a big Marvel book and a big Captain America book directly after 9/11. But I think that Ex Machina was the only book I ever really read that really addressed the events leading up to the Twin Towers falling versus just the effects of the Twin Towers falling. And it was really, really powerful. Again, 9/11 was attack on America. We know that. 9/11 changed the landscape, not only of New York and America forever, but for comic fans, it was a little different because 9/11, I'm not saying that everybody didn't feel like this, right? But for comic fans, it felt like a direct hit because New York is so important to comic books that comic books were never going to be the same again. And I think it was a turning point for the comic fan and the comic industry as well. Not just because of after 9/11, we saw a lot of comic books come after it with a lot of hope. Whereas leading up to 9/11, we were still sort of in that dark comic period. We're talking, you know, you're killing everybody every other week, your cash grabs or whatever. After 9/11, that's when we started seeing kind of the rebirth of your Trinity on either side, your Captain America, Thor, Hulk, or your Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. And I think America needed its funny pages again as much as they needed Saturday Night Live or the news or speeches. And I think it was cool. I think we got that a little. That's it.
Well, also, I think that's very gutsy to not only take the aftermath, but to, you know, really bring that reality of New York into a storyline. Because it's one of those things that, unfortunately, we've become a country that is also spoiling for controversy.
Yes, that's true. Now we have, for sure, yes.
And, you know, I think perhaps, you know, we did our issue on things that you would never be able to sell.
Yeah.
And I think that's a story you couldn't sell today because people would be too anxious to take some sort of issue with it.
That's true. I just want to know if the ball field from the Avengers annuals where they would play softball. That's what I want to know. Can somebody point that out on a map for me?
Yeah, it would be interesting to find out how many street addresses are accurate or simply made up. I mean,
well, here's the
really street names exist.
So in doing my research for the show, I found a walking tour of Manhattan and Marvel Comics walking tour where they explain where Jack Kirby lived and where Stan Lee lived and where it talks about Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, and it'll show you some of the places they live kind of counter to some of the comic book stuff.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting to see that. So how many places – 177 Bleecker Street is a real place, and that's where the Sanctum Sanctorum is.
Yeah.
It's a real place. Please
don't go and bother the folks at Bleecker Street because there is no Sanctum Sanctorum there.
Well, get this. So Roy Thomas, Gary Frederick, and Bill Everett shared a second-story apartment at 177 Bleecker Street in Greenwich Village.
Did it have that cool ass window?
It did not. It looks like an apartment complex with a bodega downstairs.
Did the bodega have a cool ass window?
Yes, actually it does. The bodega have a cool ass window. I'm looking at it now.
Dubious.
That's really interesting. Like, this stuff exists. The place where S.H.I.E.L.D. was originally housed was where in Midtown Manhattan, where Marvel Studios was, or the Marvel, the company Marvel was.
Huh.
L- Like, there's all kinds of stuff. This is awesome. Like, you should, I know you have, but you should really dig into this and look at it because it's really cool. But I think we've got 10 minutes or so left, Cole. I think we have to do it.
Yeah.
We got to let you talk about The Watchmen for a while.
You always like put the in there just to annoy the shit out of my ear.
Yes. Yes, okay. I do. Just to push your
the same reason I do scary clown voices
don't,
for you.
Don't do that. Nobody needs you.
But
I got to sleep at some point tonight.
But the thing about it is that I've talked about this at length so many times, so many places, but there is a one of the most fascinating things about the structure and the synergy between the between artist and writer in Watchmen.
Yeah.
Is the kind of crossroads. There's a downtown area. There's especially the street corner where the news vendor is located.
Right.
And if you pay close attention, you can begin to map out the entirety of that block, because he often is depicted with his back to the Institute for Extraspatial Studies. He is in the vicinity of the Gunga Diner where Dan and Lori dine. He is near enough to Madison Square Garden that you could follow the streets to get there.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. That's really interesting. 40th and 7th Avenue, the intersection with the Gunga Diner, Utopia, the Institute for Interspatial Studies, Bernard's Newsstand, and the Promethean.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what those – I'm looking at the map of it right now, Cole.
Somebody did what I've always done in my head is actually map that out. I always wanted to kind of try to – sit down and draw out the topography there.
Well, I mean,
the cartography.
What? Hold on. Really? Do you know what sits on the corner of that block?
Oh, is that where DC is located?
No, that's where Midtown Comics is located.
Ah.
That's crazy. That's awesome. So,
on that Midtown Comics will be completely squid wiped out.
It's squid done, man. Yeah. It's squid done. Also, the World Apparel. There's McDonald's there, right next to Midtown. Yeah. So just know that.
As long as they're serving breakfast 24/7, then.
As long as it's one of those good ones.
Yeah, and of course the McRib's back as well. So.
But what was really interesting for me about Watchmen and New York, and I think this is true of New York in all comics, right? But I think Watchmen does it better because of the fact that Watchmen needs New York is everything. New York is bright and sunny in Central Park, or it's dirty and gritty in a sewer with a smiley face button with blood on it. New York's Punisher's New York. New York's Captain America's New York. New York is the Baxter Building of New York's Tony Stark's New York. You know, of industry, of science, of growth, of tomorrow. But also New York is Captain America's New York of yesterday. New York is dark. New York is bright. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Cole. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's quite all right. But I agree that it's – in many ways, New York is defined by the stories told with it as a backdrop.
I agree.
So is it, you know, the shadowy New York where nefarious types – are engaged in dark acts that are interrupted by superheroes, or is it this, you know, really bright, amazing place where a Quinjet is landing in the vicinity of passersby?
Yeah.
And the answer is it's all of these things, just like the real New York. I mean,
exactly.
When I was visiting there, and granted, you know, it's
it was, you know, you had just shown the Kaiser a thing or two. There was a parade.
Yeah, that's there. That was resplendent in its glory, but you know, this was a time when before Times Square had been cleaned up, and but you know, I saw a Chorus Line on Broadway, but this, you know, I was in high school, so I was not left to my own devices.
Yeah.
So you know, I've never had the opportunity to really go and appreciate that as a fully grown adult. But I remember at one point we were just sort of wandering the city, and we literally turned – I tell you, we turned the corner onto Main Street. Because, like, literally we were like, oh, the thing about it is this is New York City in the early 80s.
Right.
And it's that, you know, it's dirty, it's terrible, it's noisy, and everybody's rude, and the, you know, everything that people were telling me in Texas was dead wrong. It was an amazing, you know, and granted, if we tried, we would have found those things as sure. well. But, I mean, I remember going into, you know, shops and restaurants, and I think the only significant difference was I learned what a New York minute is. I mean, if you weren't prepared to place your order when your feet hit the line right in front of the counter, they didn't have time for you to sit there and ogle the menu.
You knew what you were getting, and you were getting it. It's the it's the soup Nazi from
It really was, but, you know, but to dine at New York's famous Tavern on the Green and not have our coffee replaced with Folgers crystals.
Can we just stop for a second and just talk about how dated that reference was?
Hey, it was New York in the 80s.
It was New York in the 80s.
But, you know, I found New York to be quite pleasant. Unfortunately, we visited at the time the Statue of Liberty was being refurbished, so there was no going to Ellis Island for you.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
But I think that as someone visiting New York from practically the other side of the country, looking back, I can feel that fascination that makes New York the ideal backdrop for comics. If you're going to tell fascinating stories about fascinating people and invading forces from below the, you know, from out coming out of the Atlantic Ocean or from outer space or this, you know, deep underground caverns that apparently no one noticed when they were tunneling New York's many subways. You know, there should have been 10,000 foot drop offs at some point when they're digging these tunnels out. But it is such a living, breathing entity, and the people of New York are just the blood that courses through its veins in the form of streets, and you can really begin to appreciate that this is the, you know, this is the period where Marvel was beating the drum that, you know, we're telling stories about the real world, and our writers are just being handed off stories by, you know, Thor will drop by, here's what I've been up to. And, you know, there wasn't, you know, I couldn't find any evidence of a construction site that had been destroyed by the Midgard Serpent or whatever dragon, Fafnir or whatever the dragon that Thor had thought. No one seemed to remember that happening. But I think that that's part of it. And then I also can't help but invoke a certain recurring character on the show, Mr.
Oh, yeah. Why don't you close this out with
Garrison Keillor, who
Garrison,
was talking on a Prairie Home Companion once about the fascination New York held for him as a child. And I think that that is part and parcel of why New York City is so enduring and endearing in as a backdrop and a place name for comics, because it anchors those stories that take place there in the real world.
Yeah.
Unlike, in a way, you know, we'll never visit Gotham City or New Guernsey across the bay if the 60s television show is to
to be believed.
Be believed, yeah. But, you know, New York City is a place you can actually go and you can imagine, and apparently the imagination of many a creator took their walk-up apartment building and turned it into the Sanctum Sanctorum, or parked the Baxter Building smartly where some other building existed. And it gives you that connection, and it gives you this wonderful, rich place where these heroes belong.
Yeah.
And Klein's Corners gets no coverage.
I can't think of a better way to close this out. Cole, why don't you plug us up? We have done New York the best justice that two middle-aged white guys from Texas and Ohio respectively can.
Absolutely, and God bless New York for being such a big part of our comic experience. And we're coming to you from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com, where you can also, if you think about it and you want to like check out, maybe you're new to Hey Kids Comics and you want to see what we've been up to all these years as we're barreling up on 300 issues.
We're going to get it done by the beginning of the year.
Yeah. And we're going to, we're catching up. We're back in the saddle here. But just Google Hey Kids Comics back issue bin, Jedi Cole, any combination thereof. Check out the back issue bins. We're up to five boxes or six boxes now.
That's a lot.
It's six boxes now because it's 50 per box plus any specials. Box six is chock full of stuff. Hey Kids Comics quarterlies, two Halloween specials. Because how long it's taken to fill the damn box, plus the a bunch of other goodies. But if you want to hear every, go back and God forbid, spend the next year listening to 300 episodes of this show. There's at least 300 by now, with all the specials and everything. And we're barreling up on more, so check that out. We can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. Be sure and check me out on the first and third Sundays of every month at DallasOnAir.com for the Rantcore Pit Live. Eventually, Eddie and I will have a chance to put some more recorded episodes of the show down here on the JCU, but you can always check us out 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central on DallasOnAir.com for the Rantcore Pit Live. And on the third Sundays of every month, check out my new show, Isle of Toys, on from 9:30 to 10:30 on the third Sunday of the month, also Central Time, of course, followed immediately on most of these stations by the Rantcore Pit Live.
Yeah, buddy. And you can find us on the Facebooks and the Instagrams and the Twitters at HK Comic Show. Thank you guys. We are going to get there. You know, we took a little hiatus. We're back in the saddle. But we do this every week because there are people out there that listen to it and like it. And, we wouldn't be doing it without you guys. Otherwise it would just be Cole and I on the phone.
This is just the sort of conversations we would have.
Except it'd be a lot weirder. We get a lot weirder when we're not...
A lot less structure.
Yes, that's absolutely true. So join us next week. We got more coming. We got some great issues. I'm not going to spoil anything, but I'm just saying that a certain voice of Hey Kids Comics might show up with his whistle and throw a red card out there at some point. We always have some decent stuff in the chamber for Thanksgiving and for Christmas. So we got some surprises and some great shows coming.
And our annual Christmas gift giving guide will of course be showcased so we can help you figure out what your comic fan is looking for.
Heck yeah, we need to do that business. We need to do that business soon. All right, everybody, buy, collect, enjoy your comics, and go visit New York. And there are plenty of legitimate walking tours of comic book locations, both fictional and non-fictional, out there. Check them out if next time you're in New York, or if you're going to New York, or you need a reason to go to New York. And we'll join us next week for more Hey Kids Comics. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Hey, good night.
Good night, everybody. Hey, come to New York.
Come on over to New York. Try a nice prosciutto.
Come have a salon and a pizza.